Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Forced Proximity. We're a husband and wife team that read romance books and watch romance movies and then discuss what we thought. I'm Jonathan, and with me is my wife, Megan. We had to veer off course this week, and for the first time, we are doing back-to-back movie episodes with Much Ado About Nothing. Why do we have to veer off course?
Because I forgot to read our book.
Yep.
Yeah. time got away from me.
Well, no, she didn't forget. She said, I can read this one in 2 days.
No. Before that, I really did forget.
You did?
I forgot it was so late in the week.
Yeah.
And normally I can read a book in 2 days. But so we're reading for next week is It Happened One Summer by Tessa Bailey. I started reading it and like by the first page, the first paragraph, I was like, oh, this book is good. I can't read this in 2 days because I have to really sit in it. So I asked Jonathan politely if we could swap out our movie week for our book week.
Yep.
And he said yes.
Well, it gives,
I'm very appreciative.
It gives me more time to like make notes and write down a better breakdown than I would have had time for. So it worked out fine for me too.
Yeah.
So Much Ado About Nothing we picked because we wanted a summer theme. And doesn't get much more summery than this one.
Than summer in Tuscany.
Yeah.
Yes. There's lots of frolicking.
Lots of frolicking.
Frolicking on the Tuscan countryside is the theme of this
film. lots of bouncing cleavage heading towards the camera.
Lots of nipples barely concealed through the thin.
Yes. And you know they show that in schools.
I know.
I don't know if they can. There's a lot of ball sacks at the beginning.
I watched it in school.
With all the ball sacks?
And yeah.
Not anymore.
Everyone went, hee-hee-hee.
You can't do that now. You couldn't do that now.
Nobody noticed it. Like, they noticed the nudity, but it was like, butts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody was looking that closely when I was in. Okay.
This also, TVs this came, weren't that big.
I don't. It came out in 93. Yeah, I don't know. No, I didn't watch it. Okay, here's the thing. We should run through and like my experience with this play.
Okay.
So when I was going into ninth grade.
Yep.
Okay, my school was very odd. Like in eighth grade, I went to high school because they closed the middle school to like revamp it. And they just sent the eighth graders in, like, by themselves into a high school.
To a brand new high school.
To a brand new high school building.
So you're the only kids in there.
Yeah. It was, like, half of the eighth grade class because the other half was going to a different high school. And then the middle schooler, like, the seventh and eighth graders in my middle school stayed going to the old middle school.
Yeah.
So it was just, like, eighth graders, like, alone in a giant empty high school building. And then the ninth graders came like the next year. So it was that for half a year, just a high school of nothing but a half an eighth grade class. It's a small school too. Like there were maybe 50 students. And we had this substitute come in and everyone's like, have you seen the substitute? Because, oh my God, what are we going to do? He is so hot. And I didn't get the substitute, and I wasn't interested in, like, hot guys at the time. So, like, I was the one that was, like, above the fray all the time. But everyone else was like, oh, sexual awakening because of this hot sub. Yeah. And so the sub purposely subbed in high school because he was building a children's theater company, and he needed people to be in it.
Oh.
So the whole point he was there, like, it was just to get kids to sign up for his summer Shakespeare theater.
Okay.
So my friend got the hot tub and she's like, Megan, we're auditioning for the show. I was like, fine. Okay. It's fine. I don't really like theater, but it's fine. We'll do it. So we were all in the play. Then I think because I was so like above the fray Like, he became like a father figure to me. His name is Ken Mont. He became a father figure to me. And like, it was when my dad decided to just like peace out.
Yeah.
And like, I was going through like real extreme shittiness of like going into 9th grade and then going into 10th grade and then going into 11th grade. And he was always like, he was like a pivotal person in my life. And he taught me how to drive. And he taught me like he's like, now that like looking back, it was super inappropriate. Because yeah. We were always alone together, like, the whole summer. And, like, in school, it was, like, one of those things where I could just, like, go to his classroom. Because he became an actual teacher. And I was just, like, hey, anytime you want to hang out, just come to my classroom. And there was, like, nothing bad going on. I think he, like, thought of himself also as a 10th grader. So, and he wasn't much older than us. Like, none of the teachers in the school were, like, they were all hired right out of college.
Yeah.
To grow old with the building. So anyway, so I had this, like, really, he was just a very monumental person in my life. And he taught me, like, everything about Shakespeare. And we did this play. And I was his assistant director and stage manager for Much Ado About Nothing. So I can't think of it and not think of Ken Mont. And he's dead now. He died of COVID. Because I just looked him up. Like, I wonder what happened to him. He's dead.
He died from COVID?
He did. And it was, like, right before he was, like, going to defend his dissertation.
Oh, man.
I know. I feel really bad. And I'm glad, like, he was kind of like a ne'er-do-well. Like, nothing ever went right for him. And, like, oh, I found him. Like, he's teaching at a high school. And, like, he's getting his PhD and like things. He seems to be like a decent person now, like not drunk all the time because he was drunk all the time. Like everyone knew he like,
oh man,
his water bottle was just vodka. And like he like let the kids just drink out of it.
Oh,
but I was the only one that didn't.
Okay.
So like that, I think that's why we were close, because everyone else like, oh, hot guy, I'm going to drink his vodka. And that's, like, so bad.
That is terrible.
I know.
Oh, my gosh.
But I was so, like, naive and oblivious to what was going on. Now, like, looking back, like, when I was in high school, I was like, yep, that's just how it is. And now I
think... How old was he when he died? His 50s?
He was, like, 20. When he was working at the school. Yeah, that was when we were 16. So, yeah, early 40s.
Early 40s?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it sounds like he drank a lot.
He drank a lot because he had this wife and, like, they didn't get along. And everybody knew it. And I mean, it was odd how often he was alone, like with teenagers, and his wife just didn't care.
Yeah.
And he wasn't doing anything. Like, he wasn't like
an
ephemophile.
Maybe with you, he wasn't doing anything.
No. I was friends with everybody else. Like, they would have told me because everyone was pushing him to do something with them. But yeah. So, yeah, it was just, I was kind of sad when I found out. Like, oh, you were like, I was like, yay, you got your life together. That's great. Because he was like such a loser and couldn't handle life. And then, yeah, and then he died.
Well, that's sad.
Yeah.
All right. So that's this week's show.
Anyway, that's my thing about the summer before 10th grade was the Much Ado About Nothing summer, and we watched this movie.
So,
and
my background with Much Ado About Nothing was I watched half of it last night and fell asleep and finished it this morning, this afternoon.
Well, I had already known this movie and been watching it since it come out, so when we did this play, I was like, so on board. And then he's like, you know what, like, these words mean? And everyone's like, oh, of course we know what this all means. And he's like, no, you don't. here's what Shakespeare means when he says, like, and he would break down every line. And it was like, oh, yeah, we don't know any of what that meant.
I don't think I know any of what it meant.
Well, yeah.
All right.
It's hard. I mean, we're not used to people writing in such metaphor. Like, every line is a metaphor. And it's brilliant. They're at, like, Shakespeare. I'm not a big Shakespeare person anymore. Like, at the time, like, in high school, I decided I'm going to major in theater. I got a new theater director who was way more appropriate, although not quite as appropriate, it turned out. And, yeah.
Well, I've been to his house.
Who? Shakespeare's?
Yeah.
Okay. Not my theater director's houses.
No. I've been to Bill Shakespeare's house.
That's cool.
And the Globe Theater.
Everything I think about Shakespeare now comes from A Discovery of Witches.
Yeah. I was thinking of his house a lot reading that second book. Because that's all I have to go off of.
Yeah, and Christopher Marlowe is a character.
I don't even know who that
is. Kit from A Discovery of Witches.
Is that a real person?
Yes.
I didn't.
He was contemporary of Shakespeare. He wrote Dr. Faustus, or maybe it's just Faust. I don't know. One of those Faust stories. And I don't know how much of his life was fictionalized in Discovery of Witches, because I don't know a lot about Christopher Marlowe.
Well, he was a demon, so... He was,
well, yeah, but I don't know...
I'm going to guess a lot.
I don't know if he was gay. I don't know. Yeah. I mean...
Well, we probably don't know as a society, so...
And we know... I think people think that Shakespeare is bisexual, if not
probably.
Completely gay. Completely gay. That's not a thing. You know, if not a five...
Yeah. All right. So we're going to do a little Shakespeare trivia here that you're going to have to answer the questions. Since it should be a book week, we'll do a little trivia. Mm-hmm. Can you name the Shakespeare play from a one sentence summary?
I don't know. Probably not.
A once righteous general kills to become the king of Scotland and soon goes on a killing spree to protect himself.
Macbeth.
I even know that one.
If Scotland wasn't in there, I was thinking like something Roman though, because
these are easy.
That's not how I would summarize Macbeth. I also think about the
I'm gonna augment these a little, because these huge clues really give them away.
Okay.
The tumultuous relationship between a ruler and a general ends in tragedy.
Caesar. Julius Caesar?
Nope.
So oh, your choice? Mark. Yeah, Anthony and Cleopatra.
Yes.
Or Antony, as the Brits say.
So the original clue is a tumultuous relationship between an Egyptian ruler and a Roman general ends in tragedy. What the hell? That's too easy. Two knights who happen to be cousins fall in love with the same woman and become rivals. The two noble kinsmen, probably. King John, the Merchant of Venice, Richard II.
I don't know. King John? I've never read any of those.
It's the two noble kinsmen.
Right? I didn't even know that
I
was
guessed
a play.
That.
Is that like an unfinished play? Or maybe it's a play that nobody ever produces?
Correct answer. While the authorship of Shakespearean play is sometimes disputed, The Two Noble Kinsmen is one that always has been attributed to him and author John Fletcher.
Okay.
The play is actually an adaptation of The Knight's Tale, which is a story of Geoffrey Chaucer's Canterbury Tales.
Huh. Okay.
I wonder if the Knight's Tale movie that I love is... Based on
that?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe we should read the Chaucer story.
No,
and then...
I don't want to do that.
No. I'm willing to give things a shot that I didn't give a shot in ninth grade because I didn't think they were appropriate for a ninth grader.
Well, we did the Canterbury Tales in 12th grade.
Yeah.
In English.
Coach, I didn't do it. Yeah, I don't know.
Coach Calhoun. And he... I love that class. He read all the stories and he did voices.
That's cool.
And everyone else was sleeping, and I was like, all right, let's do this. Because I was the only one who liked fantasy and stuff, but I didn't want to say anything.
Yeah. You didn't know you liked fantasy then, I think.
No, I did. Because I liked Lord of the Rings, and I liked what was it? Willow and Princess Bride. I was into all that stuff.
Yeah.
A group of Star Wars. A group of people are controlled by fairies. Come on.
A Midsummer Night's Dream. Yeah. That was my first play. I still love that one.
A young man travels to wed a princess before finding out that she and her father are in a relationship. Titus Andronicus. Andronicus.
That is his bloodiest play.
The Comedy of Errors.
Oh. You're giving me options.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
The Taming of the Shrew. Pericles, Prince of Tyre.
We'll say that.
Correct.
Okay.
Following the death of the Duke of Gloucester.
Gloucester.
A king's decisions led to his downfall. Is that Othello?
The Duke of Gloucester, isn't that Richard III?
Richard II.
It's Richard II?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
A Roman general gets involved in a never-ending cycle of revenge that ends in his death and the death of all involved.
Julius Caesar.
Nope. It's not a...
What other Roman general is there?
Titus
Andronicus?
Yeah. Two sets of identical twins are separated in a shipwreck.
Oh, this is one we're going to watch the movie after Christmas, Twelfth Night. This one's real interesting.
That's not a choice.
Well, that's what it is. I'm telling you. It's Twelfth Night, or What You Will.
What You Will?
As You Like It.
All's Well That Ends Well.
What?
Cymbeline.
No. Twelfth Night starts out with a set of twins getting into a shipwreck. And one is a boy and one is a girl.
It's a Comedy of Errors is the...
How many sets of twins did Shakespeare write?
I don't know.
This
is
two
sets of twins.
Oh.
Two sets of twins.
Oh, gosh, that's even more twins. Yeah, I don't know. You said a Comedy of Errors?
Yeah. A girl's father remarries and betroths her to her stepbrother following the disappearance of his two sons.
I don't know. That sounds good, though.
Cymbeline?
I've never read that. I've never read or
all
right, seen that.
There's a bunch more. We don't need to do them all.
Yeah.
I think that's good.
Twelfth Night is really interesting. And we're not going to read the play.
I've seen First Night.
No. Twelfth Night is another set of twins. There's a shipwreck. It starts out with a shipwreck. And it's Viola and Sebastian are the twins. I forgot what happens with Sebastian. But Viola dresses up as Sebastian. And because she needs a job now, she has to fend for herself that she's on this faraway kingdom. So she dresses up as her brother and gets a job as a page for the prince or the king.
Okay.
And she gets she becomes the king's right-hand man. She's the one he tells all his secrets to. And in the beginning, he's courting this woman, Olivia, a princess from another kingdom. But he also sort of falls in love with this woman that's dressed up as a man who's delivering his messages for him.
Oh, I think you explained this to me.
Yeah. And meanwhile, she goes back and forth and she delivers the messages to Olivia. Olivia is blatantly in love with this dude. And
so they both have...
So they're both in love with this woman who's dressing up as a man. And the...
We should have read
Viola.
That. We should do that in June.
No, it takes place on Twelfth Night, which is 12 days after Christmas.
Yeah, but it's like a trans thing.
But I don't think it's... yeah, I don't think it counts as trans when you're...
No.
It's just really... It's transvestitism, not transsexual.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't think that's... That's not a
That's not a pride thing.
It probably is somewhere, but it's not a sexual what is it called?
I don't know.
But not category, but transvestitism.
It's not an LGBTQ.
You can be straight and be a transvestite.
That's true.
As Viola was.
And Dee
Snider.
And
it works out all perfectly because Sebastian, her twin brother, comes back so he can be with Olivia.
Oh, gotcha.
And she is now a girl, so now the prince doesn't have to be gay. And he's like, I knew there was a reason I loved you. It was because you were a woman the whole time. And I just knew it.
Yeah.
But I think it does. It's a great way to show that, like, people fall in love, like, despite what they think that they're going to.
You're not fooling anyone, Dauphin.
I don't know about that. What is that?
The prince.
Yeah.
Dauphin.
Yeah.
He's gay, so I made it all French.
Oh. Okay.
Do you want to break this movie down?
Okay, so yeah, I do.
Okay.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Give me like 5 minutes.
Okay. You're on the clock. 5 minutes.
All right. So the women are all frolicking on the Tuscan hillside, reading poetry and eating grapes and drinking wine.
When I saw that opening, I was like, what the hell? And you're like, no, this isn't like Puritans. This is way before that.
Yeah, you were like, why aren't they covered up? It's because it's before Queen Victoria.
Yeah. And it's Italy.
And it's Italy.
And it's hot as hell, probably.
Yeah. So they're all in white. I love the costuming in this. Like, sheer white fabric aside, it's basically this movie is like a wet t-shirt contest.
Yeah, that was cool.
Once you find out Kate Beckinsale's, like, of age, it's cool.
Well,
but staring at her nipples the whole time is not that cool when you think she's 14.
That Kate Beckinsale is not the same Kate Beckinsale.
I think she's way prettier. And she looks nicer. She looks nicer in this movie, and you like that look nice.
Well, come on. The only other time I've seen Kate Beckinsale, she's a freaking vampire.
She was in Serendipity.
I never watched that.
You didn't?
No.
Oh, well, we have to watch that this winter. It's a winter love story. And John Corbett's in it.
Is it John Corbett or Keanu Reeves?
Real ridiculous. John Corbett is in that.
He's the love guy?
No, he's...
Or is it John Cusack?
No, John Cusack is the love guy. Yeah. Like, he's the main dude. John Corbett is the idiot that she's going to marry before.
Okay.
And he is... like, really good at being a moron.
You ever notice Cusack is never, like, the first guy that has to get dumped? He's always the hero.
That's because he's the star. John Corbett was never a star. Except in My Big Fat Greek Wedding. And that was because it was an indie movie.
Indie film. She could afford him.
Exactly. He always got the guy in Northern Exposure.
Yes. All right. So.
Yeah. So.
Opening scene.
The Italians are frolicking on the hillside reading poetry. I do love that poem, though. I mean, take out the hey, nani, nani part. But men were deceivers ever. One foot in sea and one foot on shore to one thing constant never. Like, Shakespeare's telling you. You can't trust a man. Like, they've got a woman in every port. That's what they're reading about.
Hey,
like,
nani, nani.
And that's probably some, like, sexual colloquialism from the day that's, like, really coarse.
Yeah.
And, like, the groundlings would have been like, oh, they said that. And we're like, hey, nani, nani, that's so stupid.
Well, I was thinking of, I told you, Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Yeah.
And I sang the song, you're cracking up.
So they're on the hillside, and then the messenger comes, and he's like, the Duke of Messina is coming.
Oh my God. And it's like a Marlboro commercial. And Budweiser.
So all the women... Okay, this movie's good, but the opening sequence is so, I don't even know. It's so, like, sexually overt.
Yeah.
that I read a review of this movie and they were like, it's youthful and frivolous. And I'm like, this is maybe
in 93.
It's not youthful. It is like hypersexualized. Well, so
it's the 90s. That might have been youthful.
Yeah. So the Duke.
Kids now don't have sex. They don't. Gen Z does not. They have the least amount of sex of any generation at that age.
That's because they're under 10. What are you talking about?
Gen Z is not under 10. Gen Z is in college.
Oh, that's right. That's weird. They're all on like Grindr and stuff.
They're not. That's millennials.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Gen Z has the least amount of sex at that age than any generation before it.
Huh.
That is still alive. I can't speak to.
Yeah, I don't know about the greatest generation.
Yeah.
I mean, there was sex, but.
They didn't have time. They're at war.
Yeah. Okay. So.
Well, the guys were having sex. Just in Europe.
Yeah, but it wasn't. They weren't all doing that because it was frowned upon. The birth control pill hadn't been invented yet. People were not as what we consider promiscuous.
And it was a bloody war. Like, it was a lot of fighting.
Yeah.
All right. So
they all run. The Duke is coming. Let's take showers.
Yes.
Which it's like, okay, I know you want to look your best, but you're showering. This woman is like throwing clothes at you. It's like this race to get clean. But like, I don't know. They didn't look any cleaner.
The guys.
They weren't sweating before. It looked cool and breezy, just sunny. And so why do you have to take a shower? Like, are you going to like, so this is what it seemed. It was like a race to get the peanut and the vagina as penis in the the penis and the vagina as fast as possible. So the men jump off their horses into the fountain.
Strip naked. Jump into the fountain. And then start wrestling in the fountain.
Yeah. The women are all like laughing and giggling in their showers. Like, which is like a communal shower in their communal bedroom.
For a good shot.
They go put on their clothes again. And then they greet each other.
The same
clothes. The same clothes. The men and the women greet each other in this like perfect V formation. And they're like, oh, hey.
It's like a middle school dance.
I know. Okay, we're clean. I don't know why we got clean just now because we put on our dirty clothes. But our penises and vaginas are now clean.
Yeah.
Like that's like, odd opening. And then there was like this music, the trumpets are blaring as they're showering. And that's how the movie starts.
Yep.
I could have done without that because I feel like it just made it mocking.
It was silly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of silly in this movie.
There is.
A lot.
Some of it's purposeful and some of it's not. I can handle the Kenneth Branagh soliloquies.
He was good.
He was good. Silly purposefully.
Yeah, and so was what's his name?
Who?
Claudio.
He wasn't silly, though. He was, like, too sincere the whole time.
Yeah,
but that's his job.
Acting was very...
Yeah.
Very purposeful, I think is the nicest way to say it.
Yeah.
Believable, like you said, you told me, like that. He's like that because he has to be like this idealist young guy.
Yes, he is the
naive.
He plays Brock Turner in this.
What?
So we're gonna get there. Like that's who becomes Brock Turner, or like these idealistic, naive men who think the world owes them something, and then like they end up hurting a woman, and they're like, "Well, she asked for it, and I don't take any blame for that. It's fine." So that's I think he's a real problem. This character.
Claudio
is a problem. He's an untested guy in love for the first time. He's just come back from war.
Yeah, you might as well get into this.
Well, we're going to get into it later because I want to. So after the setup, like the bathing scene, and like they're now in V formation. So they're like, you know, the camera pans down looking at them. So their arrows pointed at each other. And it's very like man versus woman. So you see this above shot and it's like they're armed for battle. They have literally put themselves into an arrow shape, aiming straight at each other.
Yeah.
And you know it's a battle of the sexes. And it ends up being only, you know, two of the characters. But they carry it for the others.
Yeah.
So, and those two are Beatrice, played by Emma Thompson, who is equally brilliant as Kenneth Branagh. She was married to him at the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I read a review and it was like, don't you just think their whole marriage, like they speak in Elizabethan English to each other? Because that's what it seems like in this. And then you have the other set of lovers, Hero, who's a woman.
Yeah.
And Claudio. And it's Kate Beckinsale and Robert Sean Leonard in those roles. And they're youthful and naive. And he looks at her. He liked her before they went to war, he says.
Yeah.
There's a quote. He looked with an eye that liked, but had a rougher task in hand than to drive liking to love. I love that quote. That's one of my favorite Shakespearean lines. It's because I think it's just so self-aware. Like, and it's interesting that Claudio actually says it because he's not self-aware at any other point in this.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's saying like, I liked her. I thought she was beautiful, but I was going to war and I had bigger fish to fry.
And I didn't know if I was coming back.
Right. I like that he says he had a rougher task at hand. Like, yeah, that's indeed a rougher task, Claudio, going to war. We don't think about...
He was self-aware enough for that.
Yeah. We don't think about, you know, these characters in the 1500s going to, like, participate in bloody battles. But that's what they were doing. They were coming back from, like, this, like, massacre of whatever it is. So,
he's not self-aware. He's situationally aware.
Yeah. And then he says to drive liking to love. So he knew he couldn't woo her and he wasn't going to leave her, you know.
Worrying about him.
Right. He wasn't asking her for a quickie marriage before he went to war. Like he knew that wasn't fair for her.
Yeah.
Like, hey, baby, take a picture for me and I'll bring it to war and hang it up in my plane like they did in World War II.
Well, situationally aware. I'll give him that.
Yeah.
Self-aware, probably not.
So they all knew each other before. Beatrice and Benedict had a relationship before, and I think he probably cheated on her or something like that because there's this moment where she gets really
sad. She hates him.
She hates him, yeah. And he thinks he hates her because he thinks she's like super shrewish, and she's not. She's just as quick-witted as he is.
Yeah.
And they like to verbally spar with each other.
And which is the best part of the movie.
Right. This is the only part. Like, watch this for Beatrice and Benedict.
Yeah. Because
they're so great. It's the ultimate enemies to lovers.
And it's probably the two best actors in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Besides Keanu Reeves.
Right. Keanu Reeves is in this.
What worked and what didn't work is both Keanu Reeves when we get there. Two Keanu Reeves scenes.
Oh, good. Then I wrote, like Claudio is a dangerous archetype because he hasn't been tested in love. So he feels too deeply and what he feels is law. Like, they don't ever take a step back. And, like, the king that he's following around lets him do this. Don Pedro. It's ridiculous. Denzel Washington's character.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, your feelings matter. That's the only thing. Like, And I think he eventually, because of what he has to undergo, he'll become a decent, like, he'll become a decent dude.
He'll be fine, yeah.
Yeah, because this tested him.
Yeah. He failed.
Yeah. Yeah.
He just got lucky that she was super awesome for him.
Right.
I wouldn't even say she's a doormat, because she did, like, they put him through the paces to get there.
Yeah.
He had to earn that.
Yeah, but at the end, when they do get married, she the only thing she says to him, she like they're married.
Oh, yeah.
And
I am
he,
a maid.
He finds, yeah.
It's like, oh.
Oh, don't worry. I'm a virgin after all. I'm not spoiled by other men. Which, that didn't seem to be the problem. The problem was that she was having sex the night before their wedding.
Which, like, understandable.
That... Wait, what?
Understandable for him to be mad.
Yes, yes.
And with the
totally.
Guy that he thought they were doing.
Yeah, with Baraccio, who's like a disgusting bastard.
Yeah.
Like, ew. Like, that seemed like a real sloppy second situation there.
Yeah. And it was, who was it? It was, what's her name?
Margaret.
Miss
Imelda Stanton. Dolores Umbridge,
yeah,
from Harry Potter.
Dolores Umbridge.
Oh, yeah.
And even in that movie, it was kind of like,
yeah. But then you have you couple are contrasted with Claudia and Hiro, which are both young and naive and sweet and, you know, adorable. You have the Benedress and Beatrice.
I like it.
Benedress. Sounds like Benadryl.
It's like Bradgelina.
Yeah. They're enemies to lovers, but they're grown-ups about it.
Yeah.
And even at the end, like, you can tell, like, they've already gone through their test. They've had this previous relationship. He did something to hurt her because she makes mention of it. We don't know what it was, and it doesn't matter.
He probably didn't cheat. He probably, he probably did because of the play she read at the beginning. Or
yeah.
The poem.
Yeah.
It's probably about him.
Because you can tell, like, she hates him so much, but every thought is about him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that song about Dave Coulier.
Oh, yes. Oh, I love it. Hey, Nani Nani is You Oughta Know.
Yeah.
By Alanis Morissette. That's perfect.
You're welcome. Sometimes I come up with good ones.
I have Dave Coulier's autograph.
I know.
In a book by Mary Roach.
That's the same thing. That is the same thing as John C. Reilly having Randy Jackson's autograph on a katana.
What?
In Step Brothers.
I've never seen that part.
Oh my God. He was showing Will Ferrell this katana autographed by Randy Jackson. He's like, that's all I had. And you're not going to not get Randy Jackson's autograph. That's the same thing.
It is. Well, I didn't get Dave Coulier's autograph.
It doesn't matter.
I didn't even know who he was.
You have it's Dave just... Coulier's autograph on something that has nothing to do with Dave Coulier.
I know. Who do you, like, how do you, are as a celebrity, are you just used to signing your name so much that you just don't look at what you're signing?
No. There's two people who I would think would do that. One is him, because
okay.
He's funny, and the other is Bill Murray.
Okay.
Like, just, what do you got? I'll sign it. No one's going to believe you anyway.
I love, of all this thing, like, it was my friend Bones who bought me this book as a present. And she had nothing else, that she ran into Dave Coulier in the airport. And she had nothing else for him to sign. So she wanted his autograph for herself. And she ended up just having to give it to me because it was in the book that she bought for me.
You should give it to her as a gift.
No, I love my Dave Coulier autographed copy of Stiff.
Well, the one that's upstairs?
Yeah.
I think I did open it and read that. I was like, Dave Coulier? What? Okay. All right, where are we broken down in the movie yet?
Well, yeah, I think, well, okay, so then just to carry, it's obvious Beatrice and Benedict are in love. Their friends play a trick on them because they know they'll never get together on their own because the enemy's part is just too.
They're both so damn stubborn.
Yeah, and like they're too hardcore into the enemy's part of
they
their
like
relationship.
The chase too much.
No, I don't even think it's that. I think they have to be told.
They like the chase because even when they're together, yeah, you can tell they're going to spend their entire lives chasing because it's fun for them.
Yeah, maybe that's true.
They're gonna spar. They're gonna have a battle of wits every day.
Yeah. Which I love. I love that.
Well, we do that a lot.
I think that's a great marriage, having a battle of wits every day. Their friends know that they'll never get together on their own, so they set each other up. So the guy friends, Benedict's friends, are talking really loud so that he can overhear them, like, in the garden. Like, oh,
really
don't
loud
you?
Where it's obvious that they know you're there and that they want you to hear.
Yeah, but it's great that they're doing that because, and Shakespeare uses that device a lot in his plays. But he's, you know how invested he is in Beatrice that he doesn't stop to think maybe this is a trick.
Yeah.
He's so ready to hear what they have to say. He's hearing it.
It's almost like, I know this is a trick, but I don't even care because I need to know what they're saying.
Yeah. And Beatrice, and they do the same thing to Beatrice. Like, oh, Beatrice, like, I wish she could just know how much Benedict loves her. And she's like, huh? And so then when they meet again, it's awkward because they both know that the other one is in love with them, but they don't know.
And this is after the wedding.
Is it?
The would-be wedding.
Is it? They don't meet again?
I don't think so, because they meet up in that little chapel.
Yeah.
And they...
Well, and then the wedding happens, so we have to talk about that.
The wedding happens, and Don Pedro is...
Well, anyway, so people... Don John, we have to talk about Don John. Keanu Reeves is the bad guy. He is just so villainous for no reason. Well, the reason is because he's a bastard. And he doesn't matter in the eyes of his father. So he has to do mean things to people.
He's a bastard as in a dummy or bastard as in a bastard?
He's a bastard as in a bastard.
Okay.
Which is why he's not black like Denzel.
Oh, okay.
I'm guessing. So he just really likes villainous things.
Yeah.
He's very one-dimensional.
He's the opposite of Jon Snow.
And he decides, I'm going to set up so that it looks like my bro, Baratheon, is having sex with Margaret, but he's going to call her hero's name. She's not going to notice because she's going to be so into it.
I mean, she's going to be like, he's going to be railing her so hard, she's not even going to know.
Which is how that plays out. And then I'm going to invite Claudio and my brother Don Pedro to watch this happening. So they do, and Claudio has to like bite his fist to get him from calling out Hero's name, which he should have just called out her name, and then Margaret would have turned around, but that's fine. So this is where his youth comes in. He doesn't stop the wedding. He's like, I'm going to pretend like I'm going to still marry this bitch. And like, she shows up and the friar says, who comes to marry this woman today? Or you come to marry this woman today? And he goes, no.
And her dad's like, yeah, you are.
He's like, no, you come to be married to her. And like they keep going on. The friar's like, okay, I'm going to just continue. And then, and Hero's like, yes, of course I come to marry him. And.
But you're a whore.
And yeah, and then he's like, well, tell me this. What were you doing last night talking to somebody at 11 o'clock? And she's like, nothing.
I was
not doing that. And he's like, I don't believe you. You're a slut. And he like really does lots of ragey Shakespeare things.
He like throws her on the ground.
He throws her on the ground. She sort of faints a little bit and then he walks off. Then they get, and like Don Pedro walks off, all the men walk off because they're just like,
except
for Benedict. And here is where he shows his maturity and his already having been testedness.
Yeah.
He shows up to get to the bottom of this. What are you laughing at?
Well, and then he talks to Beatrice in the chapel.
Mm-hmm.
And they like both figure out that they love each other.
Yeah.
And she's like, he's like, I'll do anything for you. And I jokingly yeah. said, kill. And then she goes, kill Claudio. And now I'm like, oh shit, I was just kidding.
I know. His face just is like, and he goes, not for
but him. I won't he's, do that.
Yeah. But he's like, oh, not for the wide world. And it's so sneaky. I love his face and his reaction to that. Like, no way you are in La La Land, lady.
Yeah.
This is my bro. I mean, he's wrong, but he is my bro. And I'm not killing him. And she's like, well, you don't love me enough then.
Well, and let's say everything goes shock and stays the way it is, right?
Yeah.
If he's going to be with her,
yeah,
he's never going to see him again anyway.
And this is a time when you did kill people out of honor. And Claudio did something really dishonorable, or so they think.
No, what he did was dishonorable.
No, yeah, no. But he didn't actually kill her. She just closed her eyes
no,
and they pretended
Benedict
she
knows
died.
That.
Yeah, I know. Benedict does know that, which is why I think he's like, killing, that's a little overboard. I don't think we need to go that far. But Benedress, again,
could you
Beatrice
imagine?
Is so sincere.
And that was because that happened to Hero.
Yeah.
How pissed was she when it happened to her?
Well, that's why she's still sparring with Benedict.
Well,
so
and then,
he gulps.
Yeah. Then he's like, yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah.
So this whole thing goes on. They have a huge like scheme that Hero died.
Yeah.
And they let that play
Meanwhile,
on.
Meanwhile, Claudio's just totally okay. He's like over it. He and the prince are in the stables.
Yeah, I'm going to call that bad directing.
I
don't know if Claudio.
No, I think it's the character.
You think so?
Yeah, I think that. Because I remember when I was, like, doing this play, like, I remember, like, it wasn't directed the same way at all. But
well, obviously.
But when we were going through the lines, I remember that that was, like, an issue. And it's written in the play that he's just, you know, he's fine with it. He's already has moved on.
Well,
and it's
I
a
mean,
shame.
Did you
but...
see the room of women bathing? He has options.
Really but not better than Kate Beckinsale,
no,
though.
Not as pretty as her, and probably not as rich as her.
Yeah.
All right. So.
You might have bigger breasted options, but they're not necessarily better options.
Yeah.
For Claudio.
So they come up with a scheme that Hero is dead.
Yeah.
She's died of slander.
Yes, and that's,
death,
I think, an actual
death
quote.
By slander.
Death by slander.
Which can happen to you now.
Can it? Well.
Yeah, like your livelihood can be killed by slander.
Yes.
You can be canceled.
She was canceled.
No. Yeah, I guess she would have been. So then the dad, Lorenzo. Yeah,
Leonardo. Close.
Goes up to him and he's like, all right. Oh, they figure out Michael Keaton's character, who's awesome.
Michael Keaton comes in riding on an invisible horse.
Like Monty Python. Exactly, yep. Right. He's like the village idiot, but he's a savant when it comes to like detective work.
But he's the village idiot in a position of power.
Yeah.
And he doesn't understand what words are, so he gets them all wrong. Like when Leonardo says, you are tedious, and then he goes on and he's like, oh, thank you. Thank you. Like, if I were as tedious as a king, blah, blah, blah. And Leonardo is just looking at him like, you
leave now.
Like, yeah.
Anyway, he's the head of the police, you could say.
Yeah, he is.
And
the citizen police. His
guys over here.
A confession from Baraccio
to
Conrad, the other like villain
that was oiling up Keanu Reeves earlier in the movie. Yeah.
Because villainy takes a lot out of your muscles.
Well, he had just come back from a long ride. Well, I'll give him that much. But,
right.
But I'm sure one of that room full of women would have done that.
Then they can't have a...
Then you can't talk about your evil schemes.
Right. But why did the it's not like Shakespeare wrote.
Now, and if now Don, if Don
thou
John,
must oil up thou villain.
If Don John wanted, what's his name?
Conrad
to do that, because that's what they're both into. Great. Good for them.
Yeah.
But I didn't get the sense that Don John, I don't know.
That's because it's played by Keanu. I feel like villains... Okay, like he's kind of like a Loki character. Loki would be into that.
With a guy?
Yeah.
But Loki was in love with a woman in the show who was actually himself.
Yeah, you can be in love with a woman and still be.
Well, on the show, Loki, they do like say he's a bisexual.
Yeah.
He's bisexual, not abisexual.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter who's oiling you up. Like you can.
Yeah. Okay. I'll go with that.
Yeah.
So where the hell were we?
Oiled up Keanu Reeves.
No. Before that.
Well, the confession. Like, so yes, Dogberry is Michael Keaton's character's name. They never say it. But Dogberry and Verges are those two guys.
They hear the confession. They bring him before a judge. The guys confess to the judge. So then they bring the bad guys to Leonardo.
Leonardo. Yep. And so Leonardo's like, oh man, I was like totally siding with the wrong dude. Like, my daughter is innocent. She's not defiled because she ever had a man's penis inside of her. She is worth something now.
Yeah. So he says to the boy, Claudio.
Yeah.
All right, my daughter's dead. You got to marry my niece. That's your penance.
Which I think you might be right. I think it might not be Beatrice.
That's what I thought. They said no, you're right. It doesn't matter.
I don't know.
There
I think
a
that's
plot
kind
hole
of,
there.
No, I don't think it's a plot hole. I think it's ambiguous. It could either be that he's talking about Beatrice, Leonardo, and the swap is to, like, okay, you can't marry Hero, you have to marry Beatrice instead. But what I was starting to think was Antonio is Leonardo's brother, and Antonio never seemed that paternal to Beatrice during the play. I thought Beatrice was an orphan.
That's probably because she's older.
I thought it was an orphan. But the way Antonio laughs at what Beatrice is saying, he laughs in like a dude way, not a father way. So, okay. So anyway, but Antonio would be the father of whoever they're swapping out the wives for. No, that is who they were talking about.
Oh, it was?
Because Antonio was the guy standing up at the altar of the second wedding.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think that's a little vague.
Okay.
Not ambiguous. I guess ambiguous, well, too, but vague.
Claudio says, of course, I'll marry your niece. Anything to repay you for me being shitty and your daughter dying.
Yeah.
So then the wedding happens, and who's under the veil but Hero? Yay!
Yay, you're not dead after all, even though and I wrote your epitaph.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're not defiled after all.
Yay, yay. And then the movie ends, and they catch Don John, and they just kind of throw him away for another day to punish him, and they party.
Yep.
Like it's 1999.
And yeah, and we miss Don John running off with the fist.
No. Okay. Don't talk about that.
Okay. Okay, well, that's the gist of Much Ado About Nothing. It's a really good adaptation.
I hoped that was coherent.
What was coherent?
Our breakdown of that movie.
I don't know if it is. Basically, it's the Romeo and Juliet. It has a Romeo and Juliet element that actually worked.
It's the opposite.
Yeah. It was a fake death and they pulled through.
Yeah. All right. So what worked and what didn't work? Keanu Reeves.
Okay.
Both. The Keanu Reeves, when his grand plan comes to fruition, I love it when a plan comes together, and he runs down the hallway and gives a Judd Nelson fist pump. Like, he saunters down the hallway.
Yeah.
And at the very end, puts his fist in the air. That worked for me. That was great. Because so bad.
There were a lot of really cringy arm movements in this throughout the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and I think that you just sort of have to do that in Shakespeare because it's like, all right, the little people will never understand what these words mean. So just try to gesticulate with your hands as much as you can.
Like Disney play acting.
What do you mean, Disney?
Like Disney, you have to overact for a Disney thing.
Like, you mean like a
like when
a That's So Raven type show?
No. Like when you go to a live show at Disney World.
Oh.
And they're lip syncing. They almost have to overact when they do that.
Oh, okay. I've never been to a live Disney World show, but I know the cast for it on Broadway.
Well, we're going to go. Probably.
So what that worked for you, that one scene worked and didn't work?
Yeah.
I like it when he's on the massage table and he like hops up. Suddenly
it's all pissed off,
yeah, and like he doesn't say anything. It was just like a get off me move, and it was so overdone.
Yeah. Keanu Reeves was not good in this movie.
This is the Keanu Reeves that I grew up watching, so I thought when he started getting popular again, I didn't know what people were talking about.
So my Keanu Reeves is probably Neo.
Okay.
Like, I've never really seen Point Break. I've seen it, but not really, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I saw it when I was, like, little.
He was in Youngblood.
I didn't see that.
Awful. He played a French-Canadian with a horrible French-Canadian accent.
Isn't he Canadian?
He's not French-Canadian.
Yeah, but I feel like you should be able to do that better. And maybe
he's from Lebanon.
Oh, okay.
He's Canadian, but he's from Lebanon. He's not from, like, he probably grew up in Canada. I don't know, but.
Okay.
He was bad. So for me, it's Neo and John Wick as Keanu Reeves.
I like John Wick Keanu Reeves, and I like Keanu Reeves as a human being, because how can you not?
Yeah.
He's like Jesus.
Well, come on.
I mean. Yeah, but you never hear anything. Like, all you hear is, like, giving up seats on the subway and, like, him, like, giving away all of his money to the poor. Like, you can't dislike Keanu Reeves now.
Yeah.
But when you grow up watching this, this is what I thought of Keanu Reeves. And when he started coming back around again, I was like, oh, really? You're into that now?
He was in that other movie with Jack Nicholson and Diane. what's her name? From the mom from...
Yes.
Father of the Bride.
Diane Keaton.
He was the doctor.
Yeah, he's not good in that either.
I thought he was fine.
Okay.
All right, favorite part. Do you have a favorite part?
Yeah, anytime Beatrice and Benedict are together. I really like the scene where it's just super low key. It's after he says he'll kill. It's when he's trying to write the sonnet for her and she comes in and he puts it away and she realizes, like, they just have this like really frank discussion about doesn't it suck what's happening? Yeah, it sucks. Like it really sucks because I really like you and we can talk about this now. And so they start to talk about it a little bit and I don't know. They're so witty. And sometimes they're witty to a fault. Like, it doesn't even make sense.
Yeah.
Like, she comes in and he says, like, did you come because I brought you here? And she says, yes. And I'll go when you say go. And he says something about go. And she's like, see ya. It's like, why did you come there? What's the point?
My favorite part is a Beatrice and Benedict scene. It's when they send her out to go get him for dinner.
Yes.
She's like, they sent me to get you for dinner, so let's go.
Yeah. Against my will, I am sent to bid you come into dinner.
So, let's go. I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
I like that part a lot.
All right. Then that's the first time he sees her after being told that she loves him.
Yeah.
And
but she doesn't know.
She doesn't know. She thinks they still hate each other. And he's like...
He's being all weird.
Lounging. Yes. And he says, there's a double meaning in that. And like, he's just like... He's trying to like create or find marks of love where there are none.
He was like being the Todd from Scrubs.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you don't know who the Todd is from Scrubs, just do a quick YouTube search.
Ugh.
The best moments of the Todd. Hilarious.
I hate the Todd.
Oh my God. But you're not supposed to like him. He's funny.
I know. It's just that kind of humor is very tedious to me.
Well, I mean, that's also late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
All right. Favorite character. Don Pedro, right? No, yours is Beatrice.
It's Benedict.
It's Benetris.
Benetris. No, it's...
Benetris Lestrange.
Benedict is my favorite character.
Yeah.
Her lines sort of don't make sense.
They're
plays on words, but they don't really amount to much.
So is Benedict your favorite even when you were making the play, or is Kenneth Branagh made it your favorite? Is it the character or is the guy playing the character?
It was the guy playing the character.
Yeah.
I do like his words, though. And they're made sharper with her. I just feel like his words, when he does a play on words, it's not just to be witty.
Yeah.
When her lines are a play on words, she's just playing with words, and they're sort of nonsensical. His always makes sense. And I really love, in the end, when the hero thing happens, and all the men leave, and he stays there. And yeah, it's because he's in love, but he's recognizing like the situation is nuts. Let me find out what's actually going on. And I think that in a character that's so flippant and kind of like supposed to be an asshole, like that is the least asshole move. Like, he's the least of the assholes in that whole group of men. And the whole time they're making fun of him, like, for being their asshole.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, Benedict, you're so stupid. When are you going to just settle down and fall in love? And like, you're such a bachelor. Like you're such a dude. It's time to grow up. Meanwhile, he grows up and nobody else does. Everyone is still acting like an adolescent in that situation.
When the shit hit the fan, he was the one that even Beatrice lost her shit.
I know.
So he was the only voice, like the only adult in the room.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's my favorite character too. Because he was the moderate in the left and the right screaming at each other.
Yeah.
Like, wait. Somewhere both of you are right. So we need to figure out where you're right and where you're right.
Yeah.
Somewhere this is going to meet up.
Right.
All right. So how did the characters change throughout the story? Benedict changed because he came in. He's going to be a bachelor forever. He was going to sail the seven seas.
And
he's going to have a girl in every port.
I love the line when he said, when I said I would die a bachelor, I just did not think I shall live till I got married.
Yeah.
I just thought I would die young. No.
He probably did.
He was living
hard and fast.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're probably not going to go back to any wars. They're aged out.
I don't know.
I'm assuming. So that's how he had to change. Don Pedro didn't need to change.
I would argue that Don Pedro does need to change.
No.
He didn't.
Okay. He didn't change.
And Denzel played him as sort of sad. And I don't know if that's like a good portrayal by Denzel.
Well, at the end, why are you so sad?
I know.
Because he's probably going to have to execute my brother tomorrow. That sucks.
No, he was sad even after the wedding. He was sad because he didn't find anyone.
Well, and
everyone was hooking up and he.
But he's royalty.
Right.
So he's probably not going to get to choose who he marries.
He was going to marry Beatrice. And I don't think she is worth a lot, like financially.
That's true.
He proposed to Beatrice. And she turned him down because he was too good for her.
Hmm. He'll marry some princess somewhere.
Yeah.
Beatrice had to grow up too. I think those are the only two people that matter.
Well, we know how Claudio and Hero
changed. Yeah, we spend most of the
Hero
show talking about
didn't
that.
Didn't change. She was static.
Yeah. She
even didn't... after she died.
She didn't really need to.
No, because she's supposed to be this like the feminine archetype of the sweet virgin.
Yeah.
That gets, you know, has something bad happen to her. Yeah. Claudio does change.
He does. He had what made Benedict mature, his test.
Yes.
He had his test and he.
Right.
He failed it, but he.
I think that's what it takes, though. Ultimately.
A failure and pull
I think it takes a failure.
And bootstrap it back up.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Does this version of Much Ado About Nothing stand the test of time?
Yes.
I agree.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to watch the new one with
Joss
Nathan
Whedon.
Fillion.
Yeah, Joss Whedon's version. I've heard like it's worthy of watching. I don't like Shakespearean language in a modern time. I feel like it's pretentious and very odd.
Did you like the Spartacus Shakespeare mixed with modern?
You know I hated that. How fucking dost thou? It's so bad.
Not even.
Drink to me only with thine eyes, you cocksucker. What a strange dichotomy of language. Like modern cursing and Shakespearean.
They talked about it in the making of it.
I know.
They're like, There really was no better way to do this language.
Just put in English. You don't have to have the dosts and the eins and the dies. And
just everyone have a British accent?
Yes. Be like Gladiator. Every Roman movie that's like remotely modern.
Yeah. They went for something. It didn't work, but they went for it.
Yeah.
Oh. Right, so Much Ado About Nothing. I liked it.
Good.
I fell asleep today watching it because it was my 3 o'clock lull.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I
love it. I recommend feel it. Like I feel like it's the ultimate summer movie.
Yeah.
And you see how it's like, I think for me, it's the ultimate Shakespearean comedy in the sense that at the end of it, you just feel so like light and happy. And it's not, you know, you're not laughing out loud the whole time. That's not what a Shakespearean comedy is supposed to be. But you get the sense that, you know, they pull through death. They pull through misunderstandings. And you really, I don't know. I feel like it ends with a sense of hope.
Yeah.
And everything is right with the world after you watch this. Plus, it's like a love letter to Tuscan gardens. And if you like Tuscany, if you're one of those people, like this is a real celebration of that.
Yeah. All right. I think with that, I've got nothing else.
Yeah.
And until next week, goodbye. Have a good week.